Here we go. Tom and Curly Show. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. You can write to us at mynorthwest.com. You can text as well at 98973. Certainly do love to hear from you. Okay, so Rush Limbaugh, I think, announced about a year ago that he had cancer, that it was serious. He knew that he said that someday my time will come where I will not be able to do this show anymore. And he hated it. I remember when he was making those announcements and he talked about not being able to do the show. You liked the fact that he didn't – you liked what he had said about, I don't ever want to make the show about my pain. Is that what he said? Something similar to that, that I think you kind of commented on, Tom, that you liked, right? That, well, it wasn't about his pain.
Yes, except – no, I think, though, I wish it was, because I think that would be a real – you know, he'd be doing us all a service. So he fancied himself as a kind of, you know, like a clown, like the fool would be, like, smart and funny and entertaining. That he led with this, I'm a salesman, I'm an entertainer, and I'm going to try to use those skills to turn, you know, people on to my view of the political world. But I thought it would be because he's such a good communicator. And of course, politically, I can't stand him, and he couldn't, I'm sure he wouldn't stand me if he knew who I was. The key here is that I think he could have done so much if he actually was willing to talk about what is it like. Right now, I feel, you know, feel his humanity more than ever because he died at the age of 70, which I'm 66. That's 4 years from now. That's the same age as my dad. That seems to me so young. I would be fascinated to hear how, because he's such a good communicator, what is it like to spend that last year of your life on planet Earth doing what you're doing and why he's doing what he's doing. I'm hoping that maybe someone will, you know, will write a book, maybe his wife, maybe somebody close to him about what the last life in Limbaugh's life was like. Because I think that could really do a lot of people's service, no matter where you are on the political spectrum.
I think he probably felt, I'm not doing the show for me, I'm doing the show for others, and I don't want to make it about me. And everybody that used to call his show, once he made the announcement that he had cancer, Rush, hi, I'm, you know, calling, we're all praying for you. He, well, thank you, and he'd kind of move right on in, right into it. But he does leave millions and millions, hundreds of millions of Americans that were huge fans of his, feeling a great loss today. Todd Herman, who has been, as Todd would say, the unbelievable honor to be the fill-in for Rush while Rush was ailing and battling cancer. And Todd Herman was on with Dory Monson earlier today. And, boy, it really hit him hard.
I'm still kind of processing it, to be honest. I kind of got a sense of things. You know, I mean, I've been filling in for Rush for almost 4 years. And I kind of had a sense of things early this week. And then this morning, some members of the EIB Inner Circle called me, and I learned, in fact, my wife was the first to tell me, they really wanted to make sure that the announcement was controlled. There were so many people who loved him, and then just being who he was, there were a lot of people who'd want to break this news, and they made sure that it was his beloved wife who did that.
Todd Herman, who does KTTH, and as he mentioned, he's been filling in for Rush. He talked about a personal story about
we
Rush.
Took a call. We were, I don't know how we got on the topic. I was doing the show in New York. We took a call from, for some reason, we're talking to Gold Star Dads. I think it was when there was that one Gold Star Dad who was going after Trump. And this guy called, and Dory, he said his son had been killed in Afghanistan. His son was is serving over there. And in his effects, they found these really expensive cigars, like the sort that are kind of illegal to have in America. And they thought, where on earth did my son get these cigars? And so they opened up the box, and inside it there was a handwritten note from Rush Limbaugh. Because he would tour Afghanistan and Iraq. People didn't know this because he didn't promote it. And he would go see the guys. And he'd never wanted the publicity for this. And that man sent Rush his son's flag that had flown over the Capitol. And he'd seen it on TV. He saw, well, he saw it on Rush 24/7. He saw it behind Rush in his studio. And he mentioned this on the air. And I asked the man to, you know, describe, say his son's first or last name. And he did. And then during the call, One of the producers said, do not let him hang up. Do not let him hang up. And so I said, hey, just don't hang up. When we're done, I'm going to put you on hold. They put him on hold. And it's my understanding that someone told Rush that this guy was on the phone and Rush had to talk to him. He wanted to talk to the man. Because he'd gotten to know his son and they'd corresponded. And I learned later that wasn't an isolated incident.
You know, I don't know how long Todd Herman has known Rush, but I guess he's in the inner circle of knowing those stories like that. As you might imagine, Tom, the animosity, the vitriol, just the evil and the hatred that comes out. I expected it, so I see it all on the left, all the tweets and all the horrible things people are saying about him. So I thought, okay, do conservatives do the same thing? So I typed into the Googleating machine, prominent liberal lost death. And guess who comes up? Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And I thought, okay, conservatives, horrible people that they are, they've got to hate her. And just the Twitter fear has to go nuts on her. I could find only one and I'd search for about 20 minutes. Somebody else might find him. Some congressman out of Georgia tweets out right away about the 30 million babies that had been aborted because Ruth Bader Ginsburg was okay with, you know, pro-choice. And then everybody kind of went after him. And then even other conservatives and other Republicans are like, yo, whoa, that is weak and horrible. And she is a servant and she served on the Supreme Court and took the guy to task. But it's interesting. It's always interesting. It's the person with the, you know, love lives here and we hate hate or whatever it is. And they're the ones that are most often that often go after conservatives that die. Scalia, that within minutes, people saying horrible things about Anthony Scalia. And same thing, Rush Limbaugh. I don't know why that is. I guess they just feel like, look, I can do it because he was such an awful man. And now here's my chance to say terrible things about him and you know, spit on his grave even before they can even dig the grave. Do you notice that? Does that sort of does that embarrass you as a liberal, Tom?
I don't. I reject your thesis that somehow liberals are worse than conservatives. I think that there's, you know, I don't think that one political stance is nastier than the other political stance. I'll just leave it at that.
Why don't I see evidence of conservatives tweeting when a liberal dies? Why don't we see them?
Maybe they do it while they're
alive. Maybe somebody's searching it right now. What's that?
Maybe they do it when the liberals are still alive. But that's that's neither. Yeah, of course. No,
it's a small thing. It's just happening. But even the Washington Post, the first paragraph of the Washington Post, that he was all about obstruction and anger. No, he wasn't. Listen, his show, he tried to do a lot of comedy and people have been putting you know, oh, he said this and he said this horrible thing. I tried to figure out how many hours. I think he's filled 27,000 hours of radio. And 27 or 25,000 hours of radio, because he's been on the air for 33 years, 5 days a week, right? I mean, so I figured out how many days, and I did the math, that's what I came up with, might be a different number. But I mean, remember when he said this? Remember he said that? Remember the Fluke incident? And everybody went after him, tried to boycott him, get him thrown off the air, because Sandra Fluke, he said, was a woman of considerably low morals. And he's hung in there and kept going. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, so here's... Yeah. Okay. I think that's fine and dandy. I'd rather focus on the personal component of Rush Limbaugh right now and the professional entertainer component. As I was reading this long profile in the Washington Post, I kept thinking of you. So many of his bits sound like things that you have done on our show. So I want to ask you, I've never asked you this before. Have you modeled any of your radio persona on Rush Limbaugh?
No. I always found him to be, and listen, what are you supposed to wait a certain amount of time to speak ill of the dead?
That's
the
yes,
guy. I would not have a job. Dory Monson would not have a job. What Rush Limbaugh did was created after the Fairness Act, which
doctrine was let go.
It's very Orwellian, the Fairness Doctrine. That once that went away, it opened it up where Rush Limbaugh could speak and have a microphone, and people would listen. 100 million people or more people listened to the guy. He set a standard. standard by which people could use talk radio to express ideas that were not being heard on the mainstream or what he then termed as the drive-by media. So that the person goes, yeah, that's the way I feel. I'm not seeing that on TV. He was really the pioneer in that field. I didn't necessarily like the way so much of his stuff sort of it kind of came back to him. It kind of bothered me. He was sort of doing that for a while. Here's a clip. They're saying this about me. Here's a clip. They're talking about me. Here's another clip. They're talking about me. I found that to be kind of just, really? You don't get enough? But I wasn't an avid listener because I listened to other radio show hosts. But no, I didn't follow.
But the wackiness, he talks about how he did imitations. You're a natural at picking up accents. He does, you know, song parodies, the way you do commercials and all that. I think a lot of, and so maybe it's just the osmosis of radio bits, because they said he learned a lot of the things that made him successful on the air when he became the superstar was all the stuff that he learned as a DJ doing spinning top 40 stuff. You know, you have to create characters. You're funny. You make, you know, and he says he was full of comic bombast that he would make a point. And then at one point there was an interview that says, do you really believe some of this outrageous nonsense, you know, that you spew? And he says, that's for you to figure out. And I just,
he's a provocateur.
There are a lot of things
right?
that remind me of you. Yeah.
Yeah. But he's a provocateur.
Yes.
People write, you're a big D-bag. You're a hard... And one lady writes me all the time, what an egotistical maniac. Oh, why is it always about your opinion? I got news for you, lady. For whatever reason, right or wrong, Bonneville pays me for my opinion and pays Tom for his opinion and Dory. This is news talk. It's the news slathered and then, unfortunately, sometimes it just... It's dripping with our opinion about the news, and that's what's happening. As Rush Limbaugh one time said to, I forget who it was, the guy Robert Terrell from American Spectator, only in America could I be as successful as I am, considering what I had come from and who I am as a person. Only in America could I actually have the career that I have. And it's true. And so, Tom, we owe him, anybody doing talk radio owes Rush Limbaugh a debt of gratitude.
Well, then he has a lot to answer for.
Why that? Oh, really? Really?
So his shtick was winking grandiosity. I think that could be your slogan.
Stop trying to tie me to Rush Limbaugh, Tom.
I meant it as a compliment in terms of your entertainment. Yo, listen, you both have horrible political ideas. Does that make you feel more comfortable? But the entertainment component of it,
that's
okay.
Better.
Fair enough. I'll leave you
finally,
be then.
One last cut from Todd's. This is Trump on Fox
Rush
News.
Is irreplaceable, unique. He had an audience that was massive. And, you know, he could do something, Bill, and he would get up in the show and would just talk. He wouldn't take phone calls where, you know, people would call in every 2 minutes and that's sort of easy to do. He would just talk for 2 hours and 3 hours, just talk. And that's not an easy thing to do. And I once asked him, I said, do you study for the show? And he said, actually, I study very hard, which a little bit, Harris, that a little bit surprised me. But he was a fantastic man, a fantastic talent. And people, whether they loved him or not, they respected him. They really did.
I don't know about that.
Yeah. I heard Sean Hannity say that, if it wasn't for Rush, Sean Hannity and Donald Trump probably wouldn't have their career. And he did, you know, it was interesting. I hadn't really, paid that close attention to his career. I know that I think he took a real professional hit when the Tom and Curly show was on from 9 to noon because we were direct competitors.
But, you know, we did take away, you know, we took away part of his audience.
Yeah, I'm sure we did.
We took females away from him. Do you remember
that's
that?
Right. It was
Talker Magazine. They brought it up. It was in this magazine that's all about talk radio. I'm sure everybody gets it. They had mentioned that the Tom and Curly show skew heavily female. They can't figure out why, and it took some of Rush's audience. But, you know, but we got that going for us.
The thing is, they did say that although he, like, ceded the ground, he was sort of maybe like the way people talk about the Republican Party now as being the fruition, or Reagan's presidency as being the fruition of what Barry Goldwater and William F. Buckley started in the 60s. In some ways, they say that he sort of ceded the ground for Fox News, for instance, with Roger Ailes took to a prominence, and the presidency of Donald Trump. But that he had sort of faded. He was being eclipsed in the last decade, that his height of power was in the 90s, and he was being a little eclipsed, even though he still had, I think, 13 million listeners a week or something. So he hadn't right. faded away, but he had lost his sort of preeminence. But my hunch is that Fox News wouldn't have been as successful if it hadn't been for what he did to the conservative talk landscape, or all yep. talk landscape, for that matter.
Rush Limbaugh dead at the age of 70, succumbing to was it lung cancer?
Lung cancer, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Tracy Taylor, look at the traffic for us on a Wednesday. Did the pandemic solve one of the sport's weirdest mysteries? This involving, of course, the power of the home field advantage. Do we now know?
This is 8 pages of nonsense.
I know.
Oh my God. About once a week, maybe to be charitable, once a month, Jacob comes across these lengthy articles, and usually they pay off. This one is so frustrating. Each page, they go through.
Right, and I'm like, because normally you sort of are catapulted into the next page. Like, yeah. Oh, well, that's, wow. Well, that's, oh, I see. They're building the argument. Like, oh, yes. Okay. And I'm like slipping and sliding all over in this thing. And I'm like 5 pages in. I'm like, crap, I hope Tom finished this
because I'm done. So what they're doing is...
you suck, Jacob. You owe me 35 minutes of my life.
I tried to warn you that you only had to read half.
So let me try to summarize this relatively quickly. They figured that this would be a good season because of the pandemic, the COVID that shut down fans in stadiums. Is there something to the home field advantage or not? And they go through all these different fields. So they first off, it says, so there seems to be a clear home field advantage in general. Is it because of the frenzied crowds, the cheering? You know, the Seahawks are so proud of themselves for being so loud. The 12s are and all that. And the answer to frenzied crowds is maybe, but maybe not. So then they do another theory.
Reading.
Their rule book advantages. For instance, in baseball, the home team is always at bat last. And apparently in hockey, I don't understand hockey well enough, but you get to put your stick down in a face-off second or something. And so that is somehow preferable. And they say, so could that explain home field advantage? Well, maybe, but maybe not. So
Tom,
maybe.
Stop. I swear. I'm even madder hearing you come back with it.
Okay. Well, the answer is the same to all these. How about the travel? Is it because people have to travel so far? And then you could just look at the teams like the NBA that play in the bubble. Maybe not. Environmental comfort. It's nice to sleep in your own bed or not. Yeah. Officiating bias. Yeah. Maybe not. Maybe it's like. It is the most.
Golly.
I mean,
all right,
I guess.
I'm moving on.
Yes, please do.
I found a much better story, and you will love this. This is from Forbes, okay? You ready?
Yeah.
This guy teaches a communication class at Rutgers. And so for the last, 15 years, he said, how many of you, these are freshmen, would sit and watch a three-hour event? So that would be Oscars, Super Bowl, baseball. He said every year. The number of hands dwindle. And then he says, those of you that don't have your hands in the air, why? And they say, that's a long time. That's a lot of time.
Attention
span. And not only attention span, but just the value of time. And to think that I'm going to sit and watch this thing. So the question is, what's happening to sports? Because sports have been down everywhere. It's not just the politicalization of sports. Mm-hmm. Every single one of the sports have come down. It's not just also the cutting of the cable. They have found that people have fallen from schedule. Used to be a schedule in life in 2017, 18, 19, that you scheduled, got up in the morning, got in the car, went to work, got back in the car at the same time, listened to Tracy Taylor, came home, sat down, had dinner, same time, and then watched. But you've broken away from your scheduling of your normal life, and now time is far more flexible. And when you watch and what you watch and everything, that's why Netflix takes off, because Netflix, in effect, allows you to be as flexible as you want, and you can watch whenever you want. Sports happening at a particular time makes it far more difficult in a non-scheduled life to fit the flexibility of a flexible life in a scheduled event doesn't work. That, Also, with the fact that kids are playing less sports, that's going to happen as well. They said overall, the number of people watching sports and the Super Bowl and the NBA and NHL and all that other stuff will continue to come down because the kids nowadays coming up, which will be the biggest part of the generation, don't care about sports.
That is interesting because what you're saying is appointment viewing doesn't exist anymore. I mean, in a few rare right. occasions, but we're not all home. It's, you know, Tuesday night at 8 o'clock to watch whatever, like people used to do in the 50s, 60s and 70s, or like, you know, when Seinfeld was on, you know, every Thursday night. That makes a lot of sense. And the reason sports is taking the biggest hit is because that's the one thing that once it happens, it's dated. Nope. How many people are interested in watching the Super Bowl 3 days later? Now, the right. great thing about Netflix or some, you know, an entertainment a proposition is, well, you can watch the movie on Saturday or on Tuesday or, you know, Sunday morning if you wanted to, whereas nobody wants to watch an old sporting event, you know, unless they're doing some kind of historical study. So I guess that right. makes sense. Sports was going to be the last bastion of appointment TV, and I still think it is. Still more people watch the Super Bowl than not, but in this particular case, it's fewer and fewer. And that might be because, yeah, we no longer live by the kind of 8-to-5 lifestyle clock that we used to. That's
and even less, because of the lockdowns in 2020, there was far more flexibility, and they were able to see that when people, I think it was September 23rd, they looked at the number of people that were telecommuting was astronomical, the biggest that ever seen at this one particular day. And then at the same time, there was some sort of sporting event that was occurring and nobody seemed to care. And then they remember the Ravens game was supposed to take place on Thanksgiving and then they have to shift it
right.
to Wednesday.
Yeah.
And
yes.
people are like,
against
what?
Pittsburgh.
This doesn't fit my life. I think more importantly, I think it's really interesting that kids coming up don't care about sports. They're not physically active. So if you don't play sports, then you can't sit there and go, oh, when I played, oh, well, I could have made that pass.
Isn't your son, you know, is that the proof?
My son is an anomaly.
He is, huh? Okay. So you think, I mean, because I've got a nephew, Stevie, who plays soccer and he plays football and he plays basketball, does track, and he loves, I mean, he watches the NBA
right.
games.
How old is he?
He is 10.
Oh, wow. Well, he's outside the norm. Rye's 19
yeah.
or 18. But so Rye, it's a group. It's like that kid. It's that 10-year-old. I think that's the group that is less physically active. That's the group that plays less sports. They're less involved in things. They don't sign up. Concussions and parents are concerned. Baseball takes way too much time, and the field is too big, and the kids can't play. Huh, how about that? Well, your kid is that your nephew that's 10 years old that still likes sports, huh?
Yes, absolutely, Stevie. Okay. He might be 11 by now.
Okay. 11 by mean by the time we started talking about this segment?
Well, the key is... Yeah, go ahead.
Shame on you.
We didn't even get to the good article he suggested. The guy says that sports just don't mean the same without fans, and to that I say poppycock. I think my experience of the Seahawks was no different this year, even though there were no fans in the stands, because most of us don't go to the games, and it's just, the NFL was just as exciting to me this season as it was in years past. But
I used
that
to
might
love
just
watching
be me.
Sports, and then you watch the fan that, like, oh my God, when the 76ers lost to the Houston Rockets in the playoffs, and I saw those Houston fans in the stands screaming and yelling and cheering as my Sixers were heading into the back to the locker room, and I picked up the phone and dialed information for the area code in Houston. And
I remember.
The operator, and I called, and I called any numbers at random, like 714, whatever. The lady answers the phone, and she goes, hello? And I said, hey, did you just watch Houston Rockets beat the Sixers? Yeah, don't you love our Rockets? And I went, I just screamed into the phone. I had a scream at a Houston Rockets fan because I watched their stupid faces cheering and yelling and screaming, and they're all happy.
A prank sports call. That's hilarious.
No. Just letting that person know. I had to talk to one of them. All right.
And now you don't even know what the NBA is anymore.
No, I don't.
Yeah.
Tracy.
Matisse Thybulle update.
All right. A rose by any other name would smell as sweet, but how about a fish, Tom? The problem is, it's just that... What?
Before we get to that, I got a Matisse Thybulle update. Uh-oh. He's just been named to the Australian national team. So if the Olympics actually go on in Tokyo, he will be a member of the Australian national team along with his teammate Ben Simmons, also from the Philadelphia 76ers.
Why Australian? Why is he doing that?
Well, apparently, he has dual citizenship. He spent 7 years of his life.
Oh, that's right. That's
in
right.
Australia.
That's yeah. right. When he's a kid, Elizabeth and Mr. T lived in Australia.
Yeah. Oh. Really smart. Okay.
I guess he kept his citizenship.
Yeah.
I checked during the break. I called my brother, and he said, the new coach that's come in for the Sixers is not as big of a fan of Matisse. Matisse's shooting is not good. He's great when it comes to turnovers and great on defense, but doesn't materialize on the other side of the court, so he doesn't get the same sort of love from this new coach. But there you go. That's the update. By the way, Matisse Thybulle, if anybody cares or knows, Eastside Catholic, and then went on to the UW, and then off to the 76ers. So that's where Tom and I
first round
Thanks
draft
update, Tom.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And
now
who taught him
carp.
How to play? Who taught him how to play? Me.
You
did.
I bought
the basketball hoop. I bought the basketball hoop on Craigslist and set it up at the bottom of the driveway, and he came across the street. All right. Carp, there's something about it. If you knew carp was on the menu, would you tend to avoid eating carp because people just think of carp as what?
As bottom feeders, that they're muddy, they're dirty, they're just not kind of like a high-end fish. And right now we have an invasion of Asian carp. We imported them to help with our algae problem because they eat a lot of algae. But now they're so plentiful that there's a danger of them overriding all sorts of other native fish. And so they're trying to figure out a way to market them. And they say they have a PR problem. They're actually a very kind of, they have a nice taste. They're a light, flaky fish that they think would be very responsive, that American eaters would be very responsive if they came up with a different word. They realize that carp is not something that's going to sell. And so they've apparently hired a PR a team, and they've come up. They're going to announce pretty soon what that new name is, and hopefully it'll have the same effect that it had on another fish that was renamed the Chilean sea bass, and now that's one of the...
That's a Patagonian toothfish.
Yes! And no one wanted a toothfish, but everybody wants a Chilean sea bass. And so now they're hoping they can do the same thing, turn around with carp. Good luck.
Yeah, because who wants a toothfish? Did you see the word? Ever seen the word tooth on a menu anywhere?
Right. Yeah. Crunchy. Mm.
Right. I believe it's a little extra calcium.
Yeah, there you go.
By the way, rockfish and the same thing, rockfish turned into red snapper.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. All right. All right. What do you got for us there, Tracy Taylor?